T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Sweeney and Murdy on the Fan, 6:30, taking you up to 6:55. John and Susan take over then. Pregame for Yankees Orioles. DJ LeMahieu not in the lineup tonight. Aaron Boone said it is just a day off, back in there tomorrow. And Gleyber Torres is in the lineup. He's been activated and is playing shortstop, batting third tonight. More with John and Susan coming up in less than half an hour. Yankees and Orioles from Camden Yards. Gerrit Cole takes the mound against Keegan Aiken. My thanks to Joe Torre for sharing some of his memories of Tom Seaver. If you missed it, please head to the radio.com app and hit rewind. Coming up now, I would like to welcome in my friend Marty Appel, longtime PR executive, author, and I guess just Renaissance man is probably the best way to put it. Marty, thank you for joining me tonight. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm good, Sweeney. It was so good to hear you and Joe Torre. Like the 7 years you did pre- and post-game shows with him, it brought those memories back. It was wonderful.
I said one of the great things doing your job is getting to talk to the manager twice a day, every day, before the game and after the game, and you learn a lot when you're sitting in those sessions with a guy who has seen as much as Joe Torre has. And from 2001 to 2007, it was a lesson every night. And anytime I get a chance to catch up with Joe, I think it's always. We're always better for hearing that conversation. So
that was great.
He's always got a lot to say. Thank you for giving us a couple minutes tonight. Listen, anytime we talk to you, it's usually about a lot of Yankee historical stuff. And as your time as a PR executive with the Yankees, from your time in the late 60s and the early mid 70s, but you became part of the team at WPIX. And Tom Seaver, for a 5-year period, was one of the voices of Yankees broadcasts. Not Mets broadcasts, Yankees broadcasts on WPIX, and you're a big reason why. How and why did that happen?
Okay, well, I was executive producer of the games on WPIX. Imagine that, me being Phil Rizzuto's boss. So what a time that was. And then in 1988, Bill White, who was terrific guy, terrific broadcaster, and worked so well with Scooter, he got offered the job to be National League president, and of course he took it. So it fell on me to find replacements. I needed approval from higher ups. But I had done, first of all, let me say, I had, even though I was so associated with the Yankees and worked for them for so many years, oh my gosh, I always admired Tom Seaver so much. It was probably like back in the 50s when people in New York rooted for the Dodgers or rooted for the Giants, but of course they couldn't help but admire Mickey Mantle.
Sure.
They may have thought their guy was better, Mays or Snyder, but you had to admire Mickey Mantle. So that was me during my Yankee years, nothing but admiration for Tom Seaver. And I knew we were seeing something really special out there on the playing field, a guy who could have played in any era, a guy who was in the conversation with Christy Mathewson and Walter Johnson and Cy Young. I mean, he was that great. So to have the ability to watch his whole career unfold, and I just, there was an old Mayor's Trophy game, and the Mets came to Yankee Stadium, and my whole agenda for the day was to get a picture taken with Tom Seaver. I needed to get that done, and I did. So anyway, now I'm executive producer of the Yankee telecast. We needed to replace Bill White. I had done two books with Tom, so we knew each other well. I enjoyed working with him, and his knowledge of baseball history, which you have to have if you're going to be a baseball broadcaster.
Especially for the Yankees.
Especially for the Yankees. He had that knowledge. We did two books where we had to go back in history, recounting great moments in baseball history and great players in baseball history. And, oh, he got it, and he knew what to say about everybody and so forth. And he'd been a successful broadcaster for NBC during the World Series,
yes,
the biggest stage there is. So I knew he had the skill and the ability. I had no doubt he had the work ethic. It was really a question of how he would get along with Rizzuto, because the chemistry in that booth was so important to Yankee fans. They loved listening to Phil play off whoever his partner was, whether it was Bill White or Frank Messer or Fran Healy or Bobby Mercer. That chemistry was so important. So I went out and I spoke to Matt Merola, Tom's agent, and we put a deal together where he would become part of the broadcast team starting in 1989. And we also brought in George Grand, who had been with ESPN for many years, to round out the broadcast team. And there we were. And what I remember most about Tom's years with the Yankees was this was before computer analytics. Today you know what a pitcher facing a lineup for the third time through, mm-hmm, the hitters are going to be better than they were the first time through. You know all that stuff because it's fed by computer. Tom knew all that stuff without the computer. Mm-hmm. And his analytics of what this next pitch should be under the circumstances, well, it was like learning democracy from Thomas Jefferson. it was flawless. It was perfect. He added so much of an analysis without making it too statistically oriented. There was nothing about velocity or anything like that. So he just brought so much to the booth that he kind of unfolded the next wave of broadcasting without even using computer science.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I, you know, as we got locked down in quarantine, one of the things I did in March was I went back and I watched the 1980 World Series, which was one of my favorites as a kid growing up as a Phillies fan. I watched every game on YouTube, and Tom Seaver was one of the broadcasters, along with Joe Garagiola and Tony Kubek. And the thing that kind of struck me is, I had no reason to pick it up back then when I was 10 years old watching the World Series, but as we saw the evolution of broadcasters and saw what Tim McCarver brought and what John Smoltz tends to bring today, and actually watching that World Series, I saw Tony Kubek do the same thing. There's a certain element of taking you inside the game that those guys seem to bring out more than, say, maybe in the, you know, even in the decade before, in the 60s, the broadcast just didn't seem to have that same, you know, technical aspect of being a baseball player, maybe is the best way to put it. And it felt like Seaver really got that as a player and understood how to bring it out in the broadcast. Is that how the PIX broadcast kind of sounded to you once he took over there?
Absolutely. Now, McCarver was already doing Mets.
Yeah.
And he had kind of set a new standard. He was an extraordinary broadcaster. So I wanted to bring that into the Yankee broadcast, and I think we succeeded in bringing Tom in. The other thing I wanted to say about Tom in terms of the admiration I had for him is I'm a baby boomer, so my, you know, post-World War II fandom begins in the mid-50s, and the greatest pitcher when I arrived as a fan was Warren Spahn. Mm-hmm. He dominated Major League Baseball for years. And his successor was Sandy Koufax. And I think you could justifiably say Tom Seaver was then Koufax's successor as the dominant pitcher in the game. So I never lost the appreciation. I mean, here I was working with the guy, dining with the guy, phoning him at home to talk about travel to the next city. But I never lost the appreciation that I was talking to one of the immortals who had ever walked on a baseball field.
Yeah, and how did he treat that, Marty? I'm imagining, you know, sitting in a pregame meeting with, and you kind of touched on it, for a long time, I mean, I kind of undershot it, I think, the other day when I said that he is, by many standards, considered one of the top 10 or 15 pitchers of all time. There are many, by many standards, he's one of the top five pitchers of all time. And to sit there every day getting ready for a baseball game with him, whether it's in the dining room or in a pregame meeting, what is it like talking baseball with Tom Seaver in the context of that leading into a nightly broadcast?
Well, for one thing, you never wanted to say anything that took a risk of being dead wrong in his mind, because who am I? He's Tom Seaver.
Right.
You know, you're always careful about that in general conversation, and I certainly was never going to correct anything that he was going to say about a opposing team or opposing hitter that he was facing. Might also say he didn't have a lot of American League experience.
Okay.
You know, briefly with the White Sox and the Red Sox at the end. So he was essentially taking on a whole new league, and he had to learn the hitters just as he would have as a pitcher, because he wanted to be smart. He wanted to know what to say as each guy came to bat. And so as he approached everything, he went all in. He did his homework. He learned the hitters so that he would sound smart and intelligent during the broadcast. Mm-hmm. When I did the two books I did with him, when you collaborate with a celebrity on a book, you do all the interviewing, you do all the typing, and of course, as a courtesy, you send them the final manuscript, which sometimes they read and sometimes they don't. In Tom's case, he took out a pen and he started editing every page. And I still have the edited manuscript as one of my great souvenirs in Tom Seaver's own handwriting, the edited work on those two books we did together. It's a wonderful piece of memorabilia.
It is a great keepsake, absolutely. You mentioned earlier about you worried about the chemistry with Phil Rizzuto, Bobby Mercer. How did that play out, and how was it received? You know, I hadn't moved to New York yet, and I think, you know, and didn't know enough about the broadcast when I did get here to really take that in. How was his presence in that booth received, both inside and outside of it?
Okay, it's a good question. The chemistry was strong. Rizzuto gets most of the credit for working so well with every partner. He just had a way about him that brought laughter and enjoyment to every game. And those were not good Yankee seasons,
right?
So you needed that extra measure of entertainment in there to hold the audience. I would have to say, since I was on the receiving end of letters and phone calls from fans, in this town, I don't think fans fully accepted Tom in those years. He just wasn't a Yankee. Mm-hmm. And of course, there'd been other broadcasters there who weren't Yankees. Jim Cott comes to mind. But Tom was so identified with the Mets, even all those years later. I don't think New York fans ever really connected with Tom as I had hoped they would as a Yankee broadcaster. Mm-hmm. Later on, he went and did Mets broadcasts. I think that was better received, or certainly a more natural fit. So I wouldn't say that hiring Tom was a mistake. I had just hoped it would be better received looking at him for his knowledge and his broadcasting ability. But that connection to the Mets never quite went away in fans' minds.
And you had a part, you know, his 300th win came in New York at Yankee Stadium. He was pitching for the White Sox, and it's a little bittersweet for all the Met fans who watched him, a few miles away and saw him win number 300 in a different uniform and of all places at Yankee Stadium. But the broadcast that day had Lindsey Nelson on board. A little bit of luck, I would say, because, you know, he's pitching for his 300th win. There's no guarantee he's getting it. How did you get Lindsey into the booth, and what was, you know, was there any reaction to that from Tom?
Well, Don Carney was our producer and director at the time, and I was an executive with WPIX. But I went into Don one day, and I said, you know, it kind of looks like Seaver's going to pitch on Phil Rizzuto Day.
Oh, yeah.
on that last Sunday, whatever it was, in August. What would you think of bringing back Lindsey Nelson, who was then retired, to call the game? And we take a chance that it could be Tom's 300th victory, and Lindsey called Tom's first victory with Ralph Kiner and Bob Murphy. And a bunch of us at the station kicked it around. We knew there was a little risk involved. But it emerged also that it looked like it might be the final game before a player strike.
Right.
And I thought, given all that, that he's going to be pitching in New York and the game might shut down the next day, Tom Seaver's going to win this game. So I just felt strongly that it was going to happen. And, of course, it was great that he pitched a complete game, so he was out on the mound for the final out. And we hired Lindsey Nelson, who was thrilled to come up. And Lindsey threw in a few comments and thoughts during the game, but then in the ninth inning, Don Carney with Spencer Ross in the booth threw it over to Lindsey Nelson to actually call pitch by pitch that final inning. And it just turned out to be great, and Seaver loved it. Tom was so happy that Lindsey Nelson called that game.
That's fantastic. It's and that highlight of watching him react to that final out is pretty special too. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, Marty, and we're talking with Marty Appel about the great Tom Seaver. You know, a Hall of Fame weekend is quite an event. And one of the things, whether you're watching on TV or you're there, the gathering of Hall of Famers at the induction every year, not just the ones who are getting inducted, but all the past Hall of Famers who come and make the trek every year, that was something I was not aware of this. Tom Seaver kind of helped make that happen because it was not as well attended until he kind of pushed for that. Is that true?
That's true. I mean, we're used to seeing now 50 or more Hall of Famers get introduced on the stage for each year's induction ceremony. Used to be a time that it was only a dozen or so that would make the trip, which was an arduous trip to make. And they would be there was always a game that day, also at the exhibition game that accompanied the induction ceremonies, and these dozen or so old-time players would be introduced along the baseline before the game. That was kind of it.
Yeah.
And Seaver and Johnny Bench took it upon themselves to work the phones and get as many former Hall of Famers that they could reach and talk them into, they lobbied them, they talked them into coming. And so that attendance in Cooperstown grew to over 50 a year. It just heightened the economic impact for Cooperstown because everybody was now setting up autograph shows at their stores and so forth, and it just made that little ceremony into a gigantic ceremony, and Seaver and Johnny Bench were the guys that made that happen.
It's a phenomenal event. I got to see it in person last year with the Mariano Rivera and Mike Messina induction, and had plans for this summer, but obviously everything else got in the way. And we'll see if Derek Jeter gets the same treatment next year. And hopefully we're all back to normal by this time next year, Marty, and I get to see it at a ballpark because that's kind of the fun part too, right?
Absolutely. I hope that comes around soon.
Marty, thank you for your insight on this and for sharing the stories behind getting Tom Seaver into the Yankees broadcast booth, because that is a part of his legacy here in New York as well. And I appreciate you taking some time with us tonight. Thank you.
A pleasure. Thanks, Sweeney.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.